It's taking it down.
Hello and welcome back. If you're new to us, we're Taking It Down, and we're the website, The Alabama Takes, pop culture discussion podcast. If you're a regular, pull yourself a seat at the bar, and we're back open and ready for business and serving them up. We took a couple weeks off to regroup, but I think I speak for my two comrades in saying that we're glad to be back, especially after a good weekend. Speaking of those two, joining me in just a bit will be Mr. Adam Morrow and Mr. Donovan Reinwald. Today, the three of us are primarily talking about two shows, Impeachment American Crime Story, which is on FX and Hulu, and Scenes from a Marriage, which is a remake of the Ingmar Bergman classic and airs on Sunday nights on HBO and HBO Max. That will be our two big segments. There'll be more. We've been gone for 2 weeks. We may digress, so let's get going. Guys, welcome.
We got a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, great. Great to be here.
That's Adam. That's Donovan, in the order that they spoke. In COVID news, we've got Coach Brian Harsin winning a victory over Georgia State this weekend.
You know, my dad called that one a moral loss, and I really like that.
That's a good thing. Kudos to Morgan.
It was that middle slate of games yesterday was really entertaining. Clemson goes down. The NC State kicker could have put it away. Did y'all watch that? Did y'all catch that in real time?
Yeah, Donovan, that was nuts.
Donovan, can you answer me this? Why was the kicker wearing an Apple Watch the entire game? Did you notice this?
I did not notice this.
Like, he went out there.
He's keeping up with his heart rate.
I was gonna say, does he have? He's got like an irregular heart rate.
Why would you wear?
Oh, it's too high. Yeah.
What's he doing?
Well, if he knows if his heart rate gets too high, he won't hit the kick, so he has to bring it down. He has to go to the sideline and meditate.
Some breathing.
I mean, that actually makes sense.
I mean, it makes sense, but like, he wore it on the field. It just seems weird. They lined up a dead center kick, like basically a chip shot for a college kicker, right? I mean, it was fairly close. I don't remember the distance, Donovan. I don't know if you do, but
it was 20-something, I think.
That guy trotted out there with that Apple Watch. I thought, well, this is over. This is going to overtime. And, of course, he missed it.
Bink!
But somehow Clemson still lost. It was great.
Well, let's get into the real meat of our show, and that's Auburn. Lee County's finest.
There's room for two orange losers.
Not yesterday. Mm-hmm. Well, plenty. I guess Tennessee lost.
But look, that Auburn win was really a loss, guys. No doubt, in my mind, a loss.
In my heart, I was storming the field. I was getting caught in the bushes in Jordan Hare.
He's covered in scratch. He's actually broadcasting from the Lee County Hospital.
I shared it off the air, and I need to share it again, because something Adam said that I can't unforget. He once called an Auburn game the Lee County Classic, and that's all, every time they do something like this, all I can think is like, yeah, they won the Lee County Classic, you know?
What game did he reference?
I honestly do not remember. No, it might have been like playing Ole Miss or something. Like, it was another BS game. It was another game where they won in BS fashion, so take your pick. Mm-hmm. And Adam... And that's when Adam's like, they won the Lee County Classic. Good for them.
I don't remember saying that, and I feel pretty good about it. You've made my day.
It was good.
Most of the time when people bring up things that I've said, it's not always great. So this is...
This one really stuck with me.
I like that.
Yesterday was a good example of a Lee County Classic, though, with Georgia State coming in 24-12, but Auburn, they bounced back. The Lord's coming back real soon, and they took advantage of that idea.
Do you think if they'd been vaccinated, they might have lost the game?
I think so. That's what vaccinations do to you.
They slow you. Well, you know, they slow you down because you got all those extra germs in you now.
Well, it changes your DNA.
I don't want to stray too far, but did y'all watch the games last night? I missed everything but the Bama game. Did y'all catch this?
Bama game.
So this Ohio State player quitting mid-game. Y'all know anything about this?
Yes.
Donovan, can you
I do not.
Can you
but
explain
I,
it to me?
Let's hear.
Who can explain it? But apparently he just got mad enough in the middle of the game. What was he mad about? That's the only thing I don't...
That's what I'm asking.
He just got mad enough at the middle of the game that he quit. Like, he took his gear off, and he was talking with the coach, and then I guess he went, like, he was going into the locker rooms, like, he's done. And then he tweeted good luck to his teammates, and tweeted and deleted, fuck Ohio State.
Like, during the third quarter, he tweets this.
Maybe he was just furious that he had to play Akron.
Well, I mean, at least he didn't have to go to Akron.
That's right. They come to you. When you're Ohio State, Akron comes to you.
Yeah, I mean, Bama didn't go to Hattiesburg yesterday, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
This is the first I'm hearing about the of a Ohio State guy quitting third quarter.
Highly
very bizarre.
Damn, I'll have to research this.
This is why college football is really the best sport, because you take a lot of people whose brains aren't fully developed yet and a bunch of people who are richer than God and should know better and put them together and just see what happens.
And bring 100,000 people of varying degrees of intoxication into the mix.
Yeah, yes.
It's great. It's back. We're back in the full swing. It feels good.
What was that? Week four? Week four out of the way?
Week four out of the way. Feels good.
Feels great.
Feels good to start any game with a kickoff return for a touchdown, huh, guys?
Referencing Alabama, yep. For those who don't know, we're all Alabama fans. And
we struggle.
Driving everyone crazy. So let's get into the meat of our show.
We have to?
Well, I think we're going to enjoy it, because with that talk out of the way, we're going to talk about the new show on FX and Hulu from creator Ryan Murphy. It's another anthology installment of his American Crime story series. This one revolves around the mid to late 90s political scandal with Bill Clinton and, not singularly, Monica Lewinsky and others. So, and I think that the Bill and Monica love story is just a metaphor for late 20th century anyway. And current. Donovan, you haven't watched?
I have not yet seen this. The last Ryan Murphy thing that I saw was his last American Crime Story, the O.J. Simpson one.
Well, there was one in between.
No, I haven't seen that one. That's right. It was the Versace year.
That's
whatever.
It. I couldn't bring to mind. Yeah, I didn't watch.
I forgot about that.
I also forgot that one existed when I got on Wikipedia to do some, you know, preliminary background stuff on the show, and I realized it was tied to the OJ thing, and then just totally whiffed on that middle one's existence. I feel like the OJ thing was just happening, though, again, it may have fallen into that 2020 vortex, I don't know.
I mostly despise Ryan Murphy's work, but I think he's...
I'm right there with you, Blaine.
I do. I think he's over the top, redundant, and I just don't... I don't think he serves much of a purpose other than bombast. But that, I think that explains why I tend to like his American Crime Story series. I thought the O.J. Simpson one was fantastic. But what I'm getting at is I think the truth and facts of these stories pin Ryan Murphy in and give him some parameters that he needs to be a good showrunner. That kind of tells you what I think about impeachment. I loved O.J. Simpson versus the U.S., O.J. versus the U.S. or whatever it's called. It was well done and well acted and engaging. And this one is teetering in that direction in a way. I'll get deeper than that, but Donna, tell me why you don't like Ryan Murphy. What about him just turns you off?
I think you kind of summed it up. Whenever you watch a lot of his shows, and I haven't seen a lot because he kind of turns me off, the question is never, is this show smart? But the question is, why is this show dumb? Like, why is it? He's kind of a style over substance kind of guy, I think.
Yeah, that's it.
The American Horror Story, I just can't do it. There's nothing there.
I don't know.
Sorry, Ryan Murphy fans.
And they always look relatively intriguing, but I've learned my lesson so much that when I see the ads, I know that that's going to be a bait and switch almost. It's going to look great, but it's just not going to do anything.
And my understanding, too, is he has a well-worn path. I've really checked out on Ryan Murphy, so I may just be talking out my ass. But he has a well-worn path, I guess he likes to trot.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of, if you've seen one, you've seen them all, is my understanding.
Except for American Crime Story.
Already knew what was going to happen.
Exactly, but they do fit a certain... They do check a certain number of boxes in the Ryan Murphy checklist. But still, like I was talking about earlier, they give him... They push him into parameters, I would say. And I'm also just a big I'm a sucker for when shows and movies get the looks of the actors right for the real life figures, as well as everything else in the set looking authentic. I'm just a sucker for that. Even if the writing's just off the rails, if the actors are, if they look like the characters they're playing and they are doing a pretty good job, even halfway decent job of acting like I remember that person acting, then I'm in and I'll watch it. And then at the end, I might say, oh, the writing was horrible. But as long as that's going, then I will sit and watch whatever it is. And that is one good thing Ryan Murphy does with the two American Crime series I've watched all the way through, which was the OJ and this one. Man, these actors are just nailing exactly what I recall these people doing and saying and acting. And Adam, you were nodding there.
Yeah, I had a lot to, or there was much to be admired about the setting, of each small space. For example, Linda Tripp, when they show her waking up in the morning, and in terms of the show, you don't really know that much about her yet. Obviously, if you remember or have done any preliminary research, you have a pretty clear picture of her, but you know, she wakes up, she immediately gets a cigarette out before she even gets out of bed, and then goes downstairs and makes Slim Fast in like this very, very late 80s, early 90s looking kitchen, and just stands there and looks pissed. And like the sun is still not even all the way up. And you already know exactly how you're supposed to react to this woman,
mm-hmm.
which is, and mm-hmm. Even like when she was sitting in that kitchen, I thought this is not I think Mad Men is probably the gold standard of shows that did this so incredibly well. And I remember reading about how, you know, when they started in the early 60s, that didn't mean they went out and found a bunch of stuff that came out in 1961 and filled the house with it, because you would have stuff
exactly.
from the 40s and the 50s mixed in, just like we all have accrued stuff now.
Exactly.
And it did it so well. But
there's stuff in our houses from 2012
sure.
sitting around, and if you look closely, you'd say that's not from 2021. I love that.
Right. I feel like this show did it well. Every time that there were like vehicles in the shot, so there's a parking garage scene in the first episode, there's just traffic stuff. I thought it reminds me so much of like childhood, because that was dead center of my growing mm-hmm. up. So I thought that was all super well done.
I wanted to, you teed me up for a question I want all of you to answer, even though Donovan hasn't seen this incarnation of American Crime Story. What do you remember about the Clinton Lewinsky scandal? This is something we talked about over text, and I decided to bring it to the to the show today because I love this. It's fascinating.
It's
because there's an age difference between me and you guys.
Yeah,
and we'll go from there.
Well, I'm 31, so I would have been like around fourth grade when this all went down. So I told y'all via text that I had it was one of those things where like I was old enough to know what was going on, but I knew that I was not old enough I shouldn't have known like the details of what was the accusation was. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't really want, like, even though that's all any adult was talking about, and every time you turned on the TV or the radio, especially remember the radio being on all the time, you don't really want the fourth grader knowing about the blowjob that the president did or didn't get or lied about or whatever. But I just distinctly, my main memory is, and I remember this very distinctly, riding from Elba, Alabama to Dothan with my grandfather, and him having the radio on, and like everything was about to really, I don't know if the hearings were about to start, what stage they were at, but he asked, do you understand why he's in trouble? And like knowing that I knew, but not really wanting to tell my grandfather what I knew. It's such a distinct, like that moment of being a kid that's like kind of aware, but not, I don't know. This is very tied to that for me. So, I mean, I have a totally different memory of it, obviously, than you, Blaine, because you were old enough to vote, right? At that point?
Yeah, I'd already voted.
Yeah, so very different. And Donovan is, we're about the same age, so I think his story is probably pretty close to mine.
This was a weird question, because I don't have a, or not a weird question, but I don't have a, a solid memory like Adam does. We were still living in Germany at the time. My dad was posted overseas. My dad was in the military, so we were living over there. And I mostly recall like being terribly being super embarrassed by this whole, like, I didn't want to talk about it exactly. or hear about it, yeah. but also didn't really know why. I don't really remember an adult like sitting me down and being like, so here's what's going on with the president. As far as I can tell, I pieced it together from the from most kids piece things together from the conversations adults are having and things they overhear, and in my case the military newspaper Stars and Stripes, which like my dad would read the newspaper in the morning, right? So I wanted to do that too. And I think at some point someone was like, he's in trouble because he was unfaithful to his wife. I think uh-huh. my mother may have told uh-huh. me that, but I didn't want to discuss the president any further.
Well, after I told my grandfather that he's in trouble because he had sex with Monica Lewinsky, I did not obviously have the details of the encounter correct at the time or the ability to understand. But he said, well, no, he's in trouble because he lied about it and like tried to mm-hmm. explain that. But part of it for me was also being surrounded by, I was in Alabama and my extended family was definitely voted against Clinton every time, but were maybe not down for what they perceived as a witch hunt. I don't know. I'd be interested to ask. My grandfather's not around anymore, but see what they thought of it at the time. Yeah, because the news bent, even though in my parents' car we were listening to NPR, still the news bent outside of that space was decidedly, as it would be now for kids growing up in Alabama, you know, right wing.
Yeah, and so my take on it, or my memories of it, is being 18 to 23, when, you know, as it developed, and just being in that phase of life where news didn't matter a lot because I was chasing girls and drinking and doing whatever else I could do. When it would crop up in Saturday Night Live or tidbit of the news, we all had the jokes at the ready, but we were also, I think, overall just astonished that anyone would be in trouble for lying about cheating on their wife. We just couldn't, even at 18, 19, 20, we could not wrap our head around why, even if you did it under oath, why would that be a big deal? And it's amazing that we tapped into the absurdity of politics in that simple phrase. Why would you get in trouble for lying under oath about cheating on your wife? Who wouldn't do that? And I think Chris Rock probably, he has a bit about it from that era, which sums it up perfectly. Everybody my age were thinking the same thing, which was, A, we've got some good jokes about this, but B, how in the world is this a political thing? Aren't politics supposed to be about government or, you know, policy or tax reform or something like that?
Makes sense.
We had a very simplistic, limited view being 18, 19, 20.
I just remember the phrase, if he lie about this under oath, what else would he lie about?
I mean, shit, we all lie. Let's get into the show. What do you make of the show?
I mean,
the show is about this, yeah. Sort of, but I do like that Murphy's taking a nice new fresh slant in that he's looking through the eyes of both Monica Lewinsky and Linda Tripp. And Monica Lewinsky, the real Monica, had a huge hand in this show. I think she's got production credits, and good for her.
Yeah.
You know, she's getting to tell her story a little. So what do you think, Adam? Are you caught up?
I'm not caught up. We didn't have a chance to catch all the way up, and we actually mm-hmm. sat down and tried to, we were going to maybe watch an episode one night, and Natalie was a bit iffy on it, and she actually sure. did a bit of research. It was kind of like the dinner time decision, like we're going to watch a show and we mm-hmm. want something else, and she did some mm-hmm. more research and found out that Monica Lewinsky is involved in getting the production credit and felt a lot better about, mm-hmm. I mean, you hate for someone who something so intensely personal is like part of national history, but it is. So like I was kind of gonna forge ahead with watching it anyway, but it is nice to know that she has had a voice in this. I mean, I think it's awesome to know that she's had a voice in this. So with that in mind, we did, we watched the first episode. I thought it was, I like it when shows are going to deal with something big and start in such a small way. Not that all the details of that first episode were small, you know, I mean, there's some pretty big moving and shaking kind of governmental things going on, but it's really just about inter-office politics at the highest level, but it's about...
The first episode especially.
I loved that as an avenue in, and obviously it's setting the stage to open up onto something much bigger, but I thought it, you know, as far as setting up the chessboard, so to speak, I dug the tone. I wasn't crazy about all of the... You guys talked about Murphy being a bit more style than substance, and there were a few funny push in the camera on a dramatic moment in this kind of like, it's like, oh yeah, I am watching, maybe not, it's not an HBO show. You know what I mean? Like the cinematography is going to teeter into more like
melodrama
kind of stuff. It's an FX show aimed at the biggest population possible, I assume.
It's melodrama at the highest order, though, because you got Beanie Feldstein, you've got Sarah Paulson, unrecognizable as Linda Tripp, you got Clive Owen as Bill Clinton, Edie Falco as Hillary Clinton. I mean, you put those people in a cast, and I'm probably going to watch it anyway.
Yeah.
That alone is pretty good. But you're right. Knowing that Monica Lewinsky had a hand in it, I think, was my deciding factor, because I knew Ryan Murphy could be reasonable and pretty good with this series, so that was 50-50. And then that was a selling point. I read a very short article in New York Magazine about Monica having a big say. I thought that's good. The directing, I think, is okay. They do that, those shots you're talking about, Adam, which are a little lean into the melodrama, which is fine. Sometimes you do just want some soap opera, because I don't know all of the details of the story. So getting them this way are certainly going to be dramatized, and I need to take it with a grain of salt, but it's still fun to see, and it kind of gives me a few more shades of the whole story.
It does, and even as unlikable as Linda Tripp will continue to come off, her setting up the situation that she's in, you kind of understand why someone would feel like their back is against the wall. You know, and just based on that first episode, that's all I'm speaking on. Like, I don't like her. I wouldn't, if I was plopped down and had to, like, sit through lunch with her at that era, that would be miserable. But you kind of understand the circumstances that create the desperation. And on the other hand, I thought that her and Monica's introduction, or being in the same place at the same time, was great and gave Monica a lot of agency right off the bat when she when she says she's about to be, I get the FBI has her and they're about to do their interview. She says, no, I want that bitch to stay and hear every word that I was like, okay, this is some heavy stuff. Because otherwise she's just shown to be so kind of like Pollyanna about everything and kind of doe-eyed, and it's clever editing and directing to have that open, that episode in particular, and then things play out from there.
Yeah, a lot of TV shows do that, where they show you what's close to the end of the story, and then we're going to back up 5 years earlier.
Right. It worked for me, though.
Hinging. Yeah, it's good. I agree with that. Hinging a lot of the story on the very unlovable Linda Tripp is pretty bold. I give them credit for doing that. That's oddly working, because you should be turned off by her. But I guess it's a credit to Sarah Paulson being unlovable but also fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to spend time with her. Working with her would be a nightmare. But I don't know how much of this. You've seen more episodes than I have. It's definitely hinted that part of the exploration is going to be, how did we end up, what was going on there? I mean, Ann Coulter is in the first episode very quickly. You know, how do you get from this era to the era of Trump, and now hopefully post-Trump, trying to like understand, you know, they went to the conference and there's all the memorabilia, the impeach the president or whatever the all the stuff was that was just so like juvenile, and people are kind of like chuckling and like, oh, I gotta buy this t-shirt, you know, like how is this the seeds of, that's always existed in American politics, but tracing the seeds of where we're at now and looking at somebody like Linda Tripp and saying like, how can I empathize with this person on any level to understand why they did what they did? Maybe that's the goal. I mean, they set up Linda Tripp and
Paula Jones.
So they set up Linda Tripp and Paula Jones as these two figures that say a lot about where we're at now.
Tell me what your first reaction was when Paula Jones opens her mouth and talks.
I texted you and Donovan. It reminded me so much. I mean, I closed my eyes and just saw Seth Galifianakis, that classic, classic video that Zach Galifianakis did of his brother Seth, his twin brother Seth, who stayed at home, and while Zach went off and got famous, and it killed me. Her trying to describe very sheepishly to the lawyer what the encounter was between her and Clinton. I mean, I felt like I know they're playing that for laughs a bit. And it's which is kind of a bold choice when I'm saying this out loud, because, you know, this is kind of like a sexual assault situation. I mean, I don't know what in legal terms it would be, but it's putting someone in a terrible situation, but they're playing it for laughs. And then I feel like an asshole twice over, because all I can think about is Seth Galifianakis saying these things. So every time she was on screen was great for me.
I really noticed it last night watching the third episode. Clive Owen really, really hits his stride in episode 3. Episode 1, I guess if you're listening this far, if you've gotten this far with us, then you know Clive Owen only appears briefly at the end of episode 1, and he doesn't really say much, I don't think.
I love that he's the reveal. He's, you know? Like,
yeah.
They kind of play it like the reveal, like, and it's Bill Clinton. I know that they know that everyone knows, you know, but it was still just a funny moment.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. It's Bill Clinton. I thought it was Stan Clinton. Well, what was his What was his drunken brother's name? Who?
you're thinking of Billy Carter, I think.
Bill Clinton has the black sheep, too.
Yeah.
Roger Clinton? Anyway. But anyway, Clive Owen hits a stride in episode 3 where he sounds exactly like Bill Clinton. And if you shut your eyes, speaking of shutting your eyes, if you shut your eyes and listen to him, it's striking. Episode 2 falters as far as pacing goes, but I think episode 3 was really good. Much of the show so far, with only 3 episodes down, it just does have moments where scenes don't do a lot to progress the plot nor reveal much about a character, so you it doesn't reveal anything about a character that you don't already know, so you wonder why it's there, but that's pretty rare. And so that's kind of a feat, I guess, since the runtime of these go over the 60 minute mark as with commercials. So it's overall it's doing pretty good entertainment for sure in a high-end melodrama sense. So
I'm gonna keep watching for sure.
I'm looking forward to watching it for sure. We've enjoyed it in our house so far. Let's take our break. We'll come back on the other side and talk some scenes of a marriage. Scenes. Hey everyone, we'd like to take a quick break to help you remember what's happening at the Alabama Take and beyond. And here's the skinny. The return of this Song Sucks podcast has occurred. I don't know how we let this happen, but we did. You can listen to that sophomore season from the site or subscribe to This Song Sucks, where you get your podcast. They're released every week on Thursday. That first one is quite the bomb, dropping it. Sweet Home Alabama, taking it down on Sweet Home Alabama. Listen to it. It's not all bad, but
I still don't know if that song sucks or not. I was on that episode, and I'm still not sure.
You were on the fence, yeah. You may also waver on the song. Listen to it. Our coverage of the challenge, headed by our main head man, T.D. Wood, happens each and every Thursday around 1 p.m. Central Time, give or take. Look for those recaps and analysis on our site. Follow us on social media, and you'll know exactly when they get done and posted. And, you know, TD and I, we make our best bets on the site every Friday evening. You'll know where to put your money or maybe where not to put your money. You've got no one to blame but yourself. That's every Friday evening at 6 p.m. And I know I got some bias here, but our TeePublic online store, which you can get to from the main site by clicking shop, it's really popping. You can get all of our shows and logos on nearly anything, such as a mug, t-shirt, hoodie, a mask, a pillow. I think one of my favorites is the Done Up Real Good logo. We've talked about it here on the show. It's good. And lastly, Short Takes, our online talk show, which airs on YouTube, as well as the main site, still on its two-week break. It's going to return 1 week from Friday. We'll have three final episodes of the first season before a hiatus. Those shows have an evergreen quality to them. You can catch on any of those first 20 episodes you've missed. They range from Paul Feinbaum to Patterson Hood to James McMurtry to John Archibald. It's a lot of fun. Check those out and catch up. Of course, our podcast, Taking It Down, is out every Tuesday morning. That's a lot. That's the end of our break, though. I'm out of breath. Let's go into our second segment.
In this segment, can we just talk about how incredible that Garrett McNamara short take was? It's my favorite show of the last few weeks. It was incredible. Yeah.
Your favorite show is the Short Takes episode, or your favorite show is the 100-foot wave?
No, the Short Takes episode with Garrett is that was the best TV I watched in the last few weeks, and I watched the Emmys.
What was good about it?
I thought it was great, man. He seems like such a chill. I think they're all great, I should say, but I was so enthralled to see my fellow landlocked Alabamian interview this just mythical figure of surfing. I mean, we didn't know he was a mythical figure of surfing until the show came out, but now we know. And I gotta be honest, I would have been a little starstruck to talk to Garrett.
I was a little, and I mentioned that at the beginning of that interview. He was such a sweet soul, though. He's the kind of guy who, the kind of person who takes an interest in you rather than just present himself and get the interview over with. It was a encouraging interview, and he has that effect, I think, on people. Even if you just watch his HBO show, 100-foot wave, he has that effect on you.
It does. He has a very calming kind of personality, like you said, and the type of people who are like, yeah, anything's possible. And that you kind of want to punch him in the face. But he has like, yeah, man, let's see how far we can push it. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Humans are incredible. I mean, that was, and if you had let it, it would have turned into an interview with Blaine Duncan, high school teacher. You know what I mean? He was down to just talk about you, Andy, the family. He just seemed like such a nice dude. And when I texted you this, but I want it on the record here on the show. When he started talking about, did you enjoy asking you the technical parts of things? Should we put that in the show more? Mm-hmm. I told you and what he explained about their combat suits, basically. I don't know what they call them, but they wipe out
suits.
Yeah, on this giant wave, they can pull this ripcord, and they have a few of them, and these like air bladders in their suit. Fill up so they can go to the surface, and then they can deflate them if they have to dive again to miss away. Like, all of that was fascinating to me, and the fact that he got psyched that you, again, us landlocked Alabamians, were interested in it, I was like, man, this rules. If they start talking, he said, should we talk about that more on the show? Because he told you there's going to be a season two. And if that is in season two, if there's like a 15-minute like breakdown of this, I'm going to run around my house the entire time, just like pumping my arms up and down and think my friend Blaine needs a producer credit here.
Well, you know, Donovan, I'll reveal this on air here on mic. I texted Adam that day and I said, do you want to be on the show? And we'll just say you're a producer and you could just, you know, just be, you won't be on camera or anything. He could just sit in. And Adam didn't take me up on it, but I think he was too starstruck.
Well, I totally would have.
No, that makes sense.
I think I have a follow-up on that, but the practicality of that was that the internet's not so great at the Morrow household.
Oh, yeah.
And
I forgot about that.
I didn't want anything to happen. It's like, this is, This guy's sending a
signal.
You
didn't want to ruin the interview.
Yeah, he's sending a signal from Portugal up to space, mm-hmm. and then to Alabama, and then in reverse. Like, I don't need to interrupt this process for Garrett. You know what we got to do? When season two is about to come out, we got to get either him or his wife to come on the show.
They might do it. They are such a, if they're not too busy, you know, that would probably be their only thing. Both of them seem very, very nice. They, I think, honestly, if you watch that interview carefully, and Adam, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but about 75% of the way through the interview, you can hear his brother-in-law come in.
Oh, really?
Did you hear?
Uh-uh.
You know, the very tall brother-in-law surfer?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm blanking on his name. Is it Chris?
No.
Oh, gosh. Forgive me.
He seems like an interesting dude, too. Yeah,
he seems like a nice dude, too. You can hear him come in and talk to his sister and say, hey, what are y'all doing?
Okay.
You can,
I knew that they were all in the same room.
It's
like
someone.
The kids were crawling around,
the kids
too.
Are there. Yeah, yeah. He's letting his kids just play around while we're interviewing. He doesn't lock them up in a cage like I do with mine.
Anyway, this is strong recommendation to anyone. Well, to watch all of them. But that was, I sat
You're
down.
You're very kind.
I pulled it up on my television. I had my cup of coffee. This is how I started a Friday, I guess a couple weeks ago. And it was, I had a great day. So, recommend it to all.
Thank you. I try to get the shows between 20 and 35 minutes so that they are a little bit more television based. And I you know, watch it however you want. But yeah, if you've got a Roku or something or a Fire Stick or something, pull it up on the TV and watch.
Cast that bad boy.
I think
that's how I watch them, and they hold up.
Thanks, Dom.
I do not watch them on the computer because they don't feel like computer. It's funny that you said you wanted it to be more TV-like, because no part of me is like, let's pull up the computer and watch this. Yeah. I like to watch it on the TV. It looked good.
Well, thank you both. And at the end of season one in a few weeks, you know, everybody who's listening to this, you feel free to catch up. I mean, none of those have timestamps on them that are going to hinder the conversation, other than maybe like release dates of albums or something like that. But yeah, I did not expect this to turn into a lengthy commercial for Short Takes. But anyway.
Oh, I told you, I was like, I'm gonna force the Garrett interview praise upon this podcast today. So there
sort
it
of
is.
A long Short Takes, isn't it?
Honestly, when I first started the show, I thought they were gonna be like 12 minutes long. Yeah. I really did. And then I started seeing, oh no, these conversations could really go 20, 25, 30. There's a couple episodes that are like 38 minutes, 40 minutes, and they're good too. So, yeah. Anyway, let's talk about some TV that probably everybody has watched.
I've only watched Scenes from a Marriage.
Hey, Donovan, what would you do if I sang out of tune?
I'd stand up and walk out on you.
Son of a bitch. I was afraid you'd say that. Let's offer up some very brief thoughts, maybe just from me, on this new adaptation of The Wonder Years on ABC. They've rebooted the show so that it now focuses on a black family in Montgomery, Alabama during the same time period of the original, 1968. I felt like that's an actually good idea for reboot, that's rich text to explore if done well. Did anyone else watch this pilot other than me?
No. I did not watch the pilot.
Blaine stands alone.
Did they kiss under a tree to Percy Sledge at the end of the episode?
No, and if you want, we'll draw a spoiler line here. The young character that it's centering the show on, the young black guy, his best friend that rides the school bus with him and sort of sticks up for him and encourages him, he sees him kissing his crush under the tree.
To Percy Sledge.
On a swing or something. Yep. Yeah. To Percy Sledge. That's right.
Really?
I think that's right.
They actually use When a Man Loves a Woman.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's right.
Classic.
Adam, you got a special connection to the original version of The Wonder Years. Maybe you do too, Donovan. You even named one of your bands after a character from The Wonder Years, right?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you?
Yeah, Cutlip. Yeah.
Man, I love that Cutlip stuff. Adam was very nice to say good things about Short Takes. I will tell you guys this. Cut Lip is one of Adam's maybe lesser known, unknown kind of bands, but those songs are so Some of them are without lyrics. They're just very beautiful and transcendent. Wonderful fall music just to have on.
I was just going to say that. Really good fall.
They're so good.
Stuff. Leaves are changing, getting chilly. Put on some Cutlip.
You can find them on Spotify, so I often listen to them around this time of year.
Would you tell Garrett that now that y'all are friends? Can I soundtrack 100
to listen to Cut? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Philip Glass sucks. Give me the job.
Philip Glass is great, man. Why the deep connection to the Wonder Years, though, Adam?
I mean, it's funny now to think about basically the same distance from the original Wonder Years that it was from the time that it was. Like, I have nostalgia for a show about nostalgia, which is kind of a weird, hazy thing. But, I mean, it was just on in syndication by the time I was... Because it came out... I can't remember what year it debuted, but it was...
86 or so?
I think it was... Was it that early or was it a little bit later than that?
It could have been around 88.
It was quickly in syndication and on all the time. So I watched it growing up and just loved it. And we... Again, not to say this for the 100th time on the show today, but we texted a bit about how seeing good shows use good music, it just sticks in your brain forever. Like that Percy Sledge song, the first time that I remember hearing that song, I'm sure I heard it on the radio before that, but I just strongly associate that with the pilot episode of the original and being younger than the kids in the show. I didn't think that they looked like, you know, tiny humans like I do now. Like, they were like fully fleshed out characters in my brain, so it had like this weight to it, I guess. I loved it.
Donovan, do you have the same admiration for the Wonder Years?
You know, I think Adam likes it a little bit more than I do, but kind of the same relationship. Like, it was in syndication, and when Adam said, you know, you were younger, I just flashed back to like watching it and being younger than the characters on the screen, and in some ways it's like this is what adulthood's gonna be like this is the this is the path,
especially
I'm going
the older
towards.
Siblings when Karen and the sister would disappear for a while and come back, you're like, man, what's college all about,
what's going on there? Yeah.
Again, to demonstrate our age differences, I remember watching it live on ABC the night it aired, and it was great. I did lose interest in it pretty quickly. This is back when all shows had to have 21, 22 episodes. And
there's filler often, episodes for sure.
Yeah, and often not. You know, back then there was no DVR. Not many people had a VCR, so they would have to structure shows so that you could just, if you watched episode 4, it didn't hurt you that you hadn't seen the first 3 episodes.
Right.
And that makes sense. So I guess a lack of through line or narrative may have helped me to just dive out pretty quickly. But those first few episodes I thought were really good and touching and stuff. So I'll give you a quick review. I'll give you guys what I took away from this reboot. It felt pretty bland and generic because of one main issue, which is so typical for almost all broadcast television sitcoms, is when certain shows in this genre don't have great jokes after jokes after jokes, then all of their scenes just feel way too scared to pause on anything in order to let me feel or look or just sit with a character or a scene. And there were large swaths of it that felt very inauthentic. I always find it tiring when shows or movies don't take you somewhere, which can be hindered by something as simple as if the entire show looks like it's filmed on a set somewhere. I don't think this one was, but it still felt like it. And, you know, it's just damn near impossible for a first episode of a broadcast sitcom to be excellent. Does this one offer promise? It might. It very well might. I think what I'll do is bow out on it, and then if I see critics raving about it in the next few months, I might try to pick it back up because it could, but it just felt so rushed. And what they did with this episode is they had the Martin Luther King assassination be a centerpiece. And that was handled well, but and the sister, instead of being a hippie, she's sort of a secret Black Panther. That has promise. I don't know, though. It just felt rushed, and it did not feel confident whatsoever. And that's probably every sitcom ever. You know, Seinfeld's first season was horrible. And I'll keep my eye for critics' thoughts.
The first episode of the original, I wonder, you know, you talked about space and kind of living with characters. I wonder if that the pacing of that episode could get made now, because I do remember a lot of moments of like letting things breathe, and they set the stage really well, and it seems like the expectation for nonstop either jokes or story or something going on, like people making television think much less of our attention span than they did 30 years ago.
Was the original a 30 minute show or a 60 minute?
It's 30. I don't know if the first episode longer. It's a good question.
It's a really good question.
But the emotional hinge point on this new one was MLK's assassination.
That's right.
I wondered if they would do something like, because the first one was Winnie's brother dying in Vietnam is like the
tragedy. This character does have an older brother in Vietnam.
Oh, okay.
But there's no mention of him dying or hurt or anything. All right, well, we'll keep our eye out, and if we think that it's going somewhere, we might return to it. But for now, I'm telling everybody to maybe wait and see. You don't have to watch the pilot. I don't think it's going to be the most incredible thing ever. I did see some message boards chatter. People were saying they liked it a lot, but not for me. I do want to get into something that will absolutely pause and let you breathe with a fucking character, and that is, let's sour the mood a bit by talking about Scenes from a Marriage. And this show stars Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain as the married couple in the remake of the Ingmar Bergman classic. I'm not familiar with that version, sadly, but I feel as though I should be. This show that we're talking about, this version, airs every Sunday evening on HBO and HBO Max. The first two episodes, and I think maybe all of them, are written and directed by Hagai Levi, if I'm saying his name correct. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's all of them.
He did all of them. And there's
he did all of them.
How many are there going to be, six or eight?
It's limited. Six, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is six, because I remember thinking that six would be all you could take.
Yes.
Adam, have you watched?
I haven't. And I'll tell you why. Okay. Because
That was going to be my very first question. Honestly, as I didn't think you'd watched it, but I was curious why, and I'll say why I'm curious. We were talking about this show in a group text, and I noted that you were decidedly out on it when we were chatting about it. Is that an issue of time? Did it not appeal to you? Because you are the target audience for an HBO drama on Sunday. So
I am. I'm dead center. Tell me. Bring up Bergman too, and it's just like, I mean, there's blood in the water, but I read a New York Times piece that interviewed the two stars, and they were both just seemed like they had been through a tortured process on making this, like both of them saying things like, I would just go home in tears, and it took me forever to recover from that. I was like, you know, I'm gonna watch this eventually, but I'm in a good place right now. The autumn has come to North Alabama. I'm having a good time. I don't know that I need this right this second. So it's on the shelf for me. I may even start watching and catch up before it goes off air. But I did not elect to start the show with y'all. Yes,
that answers my question. I was very curious as to why you were really. You never said anything blatantly, but you were really checked out on this.
Well, I think I have literally just read, when you texted about it, Jessica Chastain talking about like being breaking down. It's like, I don't know that this is maybe not the right moment for me.
Well, yeah, well, let's get into it. We are going to spoil the first two episodes for anyone who if you're debating it, I say watch it, and I do recommend it highly. But anyway, spoilers from here on out.
This one's kind of a hard one to spoil, though, because there's not a lot of plot, especially in the second one.
And not really.
More scenes.
No, the whole show was actually... the whole show was actually spoiled to me. I read an interview with Jessica Chastain and the original actress.
Liv Ullmann?
Yes, thank you. And they were interviewed together, and so, like, many, many quote-unquote plot points were spoiled for me, and I kind of got ticked, but then I thought, I'll just see if that hinders my viewing of the show.
And has it so far? I'm curious.
No! Okay. Not at all. And that's... So, Scenes from a Marriage, the second episode, let me back up. The interview talks about how in this remake, the wife is the one who does the cheating.
Yes.
And so I thought, wow, that's a huge spoiler. But man, the second episode hit me from the side as if I never saw it coming, as if I never knew that information. It's pretty impressive how that happened. I still don't know how it happened. I think...
Is it my favorite thing about the series, which is Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain's performance, because I feel like in that episode there's something like Oscar Isaac especially does this really good job of just cycling through, like, you can just tell that this is a guy who just can't believe it's happening. He wants it all to stop, and but they're such good charismatic actors. At least I found myself really identifying with both of them, right? Or empathizing maybe with both of them?
A little bit. And they're putting on a masterclass. It's going to be annoying for some people of just how much acting is going on. I could see that being a gripe. And it's not that they're overacting, it's just that this entire series is they just have to act every second, and I don't mean that it's inauthentic. I mean it's just intense, internally intense.
And they're really carrying. I think it's them, at least in these first two episodes, they are carrying the series much more than anything else does.
Right, they're almost the only two people in the series so far.
Yeah.
That's right. So did you find the show just too internal? Is it too slow for you? It's got a dilatory pace, especially that opening episode, I thought. And I don't know if modern viewers are going to be able to get through it. It's kind of the direct opposite of The Wonder Years. It's very much like a play.
I did find it to be slow. I think the big plus there is that, you know, Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain are charismatic movie stars who know how to act for a camera and kind of make you want to keep watching them to see what's going to happen. But there were some moments, especially with the first episode, where I found myself checking my phone just because it's like,
me too.
How, you know, and then there were some moments that just, you know, where it just sang, right? It just zipped along and it was great.
The second episode managed to avoid those problems, and Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac are the only two actors on screen, sans the young girl, the little girl. I'm very interested in what you make of the opening of both of these episodes where Levi, the director, strips away this artifice by showing you the actors go on set and then settle into the scene. What are you making of that?
I have no idea, unless it's like... This is where I'm like, boy, I wish I'd watched the original, because is this nodding to the original in some way, or is this just like a,
I don't know,
you know, infamously, not infamously, but like famously in Persona, the Bergman movie Persona, there's a bit where Bergman films himself filming the movie. I just wondered if possibly there was some inspiration there.
But probably.
I keep seeing, I don't know why, but it keeps fascinating me, because seeing the COVID protocols and then kind of slowly get stripped away and then settle into their and then it settles into this the scene.
And it's a bit off-putting.
It is, and it's, you know, you and Adam kind of mentioned how much you like good set design and production values. And I think that this show has really, really good set design, and it's kind of odd because it almost seems like it undercuts how good their sets are by showing that fourth wall. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if it's necessary. I don't know if it's just a fun little note. It is kind of wild. I do really like both times watching the actors get their faces ready for what the scene's going to ask of them. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. But do you think it's adding anything? I'm curious too.
I don't think it's adding anything more than a homage to Bergman, which that makes sense now. The second episode, I had thought of a description for it. It's a gut punch in slow motion. Oh man. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say just agonizingly slow motion. I think the central scene is what, probably somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes long. I mean, not one take, but one scene.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, there are cuts there, but it's the equivalent of not just removing a Band-Aid, but picking at it a millimeter at a time.
Yeah,
it's pretty painful.
Did you find that, you know, not only is it a slow motion gut punch, but there's bits towards, towards the end of the episode where it just starts going, they just start going through the empty house and the music is so ominous that it almost feels like, it's like, did you get your reels cut in, mixed up and cut this in with a slasher movie or something? Like there's this almost horrific feeling to things.
Oh no. One of my notes here says that it plays like a horror movie that you just knew at any moment. For me, the reason why it played like a horror movie is that you knew at any moment the daughter was going to awake and walk in the room.
Oh, then, absolutely.
Then the very last scene, that's what it is. Oh, man. You talked about having some sympathy or empathy. Do you see why the Jessica Chastain's character, Mira, would leave?
I don't. Maybe from the first episode where Oscar Isaac's character is almost a little...
Patronizing,
kind of talks over her a little bit. Talks
a little
for
annoying.
Her.
Little annoying. Uh-huh.
And, but then, I think it works because she says, you know, like I'm not attracted. I think it works as a gut punch because she says I'm not attracted to you, and they have had such good chemistry together that you're almost sitting there like. What you're almost as surprised at, or at least I mean, I knew that's what was going to happen, but I felt the surprise of Oscar Isaac's character, right? Where it's like, where did this come from?
It's a credit to him, too, to be able to pull off the sad sack guy in episode 2 versus that patronizing, annoying husband in episode 1.
And, to go from really being annoying to it really flipped, and I felt like a lot of sympathy for his character that second episode. But neither at least I think the way they're playing it, neither character is really the villain. Both of them seem pretty empathetic.
That's certainly the way it's supposed to be, but I seeing her as a little villainous.
Yeah. Really interesting. Because I'm not sure, at least me watching it, I'm kind of like, I'm not sure that I necessarily, maybe I'm a little bit more on his side than her side. Mm-hmm. Just something about her performance is really powerful.
Yeah,
and
it is.
And it makes you kind of want, at least it makes me kind of not necessarily agree with her point of view, but want to see her point of view, feel where she's coming more feel. I think it's more feeling than understanding and thinking.
Yeah,
it's more something you apprehend.
It's genius to flip the genders and let her be the one that's cheating, because that allows the show to mine so much more and to get something out of a reboot rather than just redo. So kudos to them for doing it this way. If they're going to do it at all, that would probably be the only way to do it. And I'll end with one last question. Was it the dad in me, Donovan, or the whole time were you thinking about the poor daughter? I mean, the whole time, that's all I thought about.
Yes, the whole time. God, for the second episode, not wanting her to wake up, and then, you know, this poor, I'm just like, you know, you kind of imagine, like, wow, what if my parents had done this to me? Just one day been like, yeah, we're not going to, you know, you're not going to see mom for a while anymore. She's going to.
Oh, okay. I get that viewpoint too. But for me, having a daughter the exact same age and just thinking, what would I do? What would I do? How would I explain this to my girl? She would be ripped apart.
Yeah. And, that's what I was sort of trying to get at with, like, what would that, how would you possibly tell her?
God, I don't know. It's gonna be devastating to watch. But the good news is, Adam was talking about it might be too much to handle right now, but it did make me want to be a better person.
Well, I'm definitely not watching.
I saw that. I saw everything they were doing, and I was thinking, I need to make sure I'm not subtly hindering, hurting, you know, my family. But yeah, whew, good stuff. Shows you something about life. Good art. It's supposed to do that, I guess. That's it for this week. We thank you so much for listening. Subscribe and don't miss an episode. We'll be back next Tuesday. We got some options on the docket. Our agenda could very well have the Many Saints of New York. I'm going to try to talk these guys into that one, but we'll see. We got Netflix's Midnight Mass. I think we're going to cover that within the next couple of weeks for some Halloween discussion. Yeah, lots more to choose from. Join us. We'll let you know ahead of time on Twitter. Okay? Thanks, everyone.